Okay, great. All right. So His Holiness Karmapa is pointing out here is that this verse could itself, in addition to its content, that we should, its instruction, that we should dedicate all of our practice, all of our practice of all 37 practices to the enlightenment of all sentient beings, His Holiness Karmapa feels that it also, the verse in itself, serves as a dedication for all the preceding text written by Tokme Zangpo. And I thought that was pretty nice.
Chidren?
Yes, Lama Jinzang.
I just have a note here that sure. I made when he taught it.
Great.
So I'm looking on page 100 in this book.
Page 100, oh, in Traveling the Path of Compassion, yeah.
So I have underlined, in, so it says, you know, you said to dispel the suffering of limitless beings with a wisdom not tainted by concept of the three realms. What he was saying, he was emphasizing that the line with a wisdom not tainted by concepts of the three domains really means to give away all virtue with no reservation, without attachment. So he was really stressing that this notion of not being tainted by the concepts of the three realms or whatever is to be completely without reservation, without any attachment.
Right. Because I guess, so that's what he said in the recent teaching?
Yeah, that's what I have from the recent teaching.
Thank you so much for listening to that and sharing that with us. And again, yeah, Kathy, I'll get to you in just a second. The three domains or the three spheres are being attached to ourself as the giver, in generosity, to self as the dedicator for this verse, to sentient beings who we feel that we're benefiting by dedicating it to, and the fact of dedicating it. We're giving up those attachments specifically, and that is wisdom. Thank you so much. And Kathy, I'm unmuting you.
I had also written down that... to dedicate this over, to dedicate all the merit over and over, and then it becomes inexhaustible.
That's from the Karmapa's teaching, the recent
from the teaching, yeah.
Right,
I like,
yes. Dingo Chensei Rinpoche, I think we're gonna get to that maybe in this class, also said that it becomes inexhaustible by dedicating it. Mm. Inexhaustible and undeteriorating. So if you happen to get mad at a driver who cuts in front of you later in the morning after you've done your practice, you lose that merit because it's dedicated. Yes, Deidre.
Yeah, one of the takeaways I had from that same teaching that he gave was he said this virtue can be buried so deep that nothing can touch it. This type of dedication.
Right. So that's, it sounds like another way of saying that it's like it just remains completely pristine no matter what happens next. Right. Yes, well, that's great that other people had a chance to listen to the teaching. So I really appreciate your hearing that. All right. Anybody else have anything? All right. So next on the list is, Kenpo Sutram Jamso Rinpoche. So he says, he has a very nice summary here. He says, so how does a bodhisattva dedicate merit? The bodhisattva applies the superior knowledge, the insight. That actually superior knowledge is the way that Michelle Martin, his translator, translates. Or actually, he says deeper knowing sometimes. That superior knowledge refers to insight into the emptiness of all things. So the bodhisattva applies the superior knowledge of emptiness to the three spheres or the three domains. I'm using three domains more now because that's what His Holiness Karmapa uses in his book. I think it's a better word for our purposes than spheres, which is the way the literal translation that's been used for many years. So the bodhisattva applies his or her superior knowledge of emptiness to the three spheres. This means that he or she purifies the dedication process by realizing that there is no one to dedicate merit, no merit to be dedicated, and no one to receive the merit. Subject, action, object do not truly exist. This is the meaning of free of concepts of the three spheres or three domains, and it cannot be separated from the superior knowledge with which it is suffused namely the wisdom that realizes emptiness. Without understanding that the three spheres do not truly exist, it is quite difficult to comprehend how to dedicate merit in this way. So he's going to tell us how we should understand it. In case that we are one of those people who doesn't understand in what way the three spheres do not truly exist, he's going to tell us in the next paragraph, fortunately. He says, imagine a dream in which you are sitting before a shrine. And this could be one. In the exact moment of dedication, you awaken and instantly realize that no one has been dedicating merit. No merit has been dedicated, and no one has received any merit because it was all a dream. And that's the way it is when you wake up from a dream, right? You realize that everything that happened to you in the last however long the dream lasted, none of it actually happened. It didn't really exist. There was no person chasing you. There was no person, you know, doing whatever happened in the dream. So we realize if we wake up from a dream of dedicating merit, then we immediately realize the lack of existence of these three domains. He says, this is how to understand the practice of dedicating merit. And I also have some quotes from Dingo Chense Rinpoche in Heart of Compassion. So he says, on page 194, he says, dedication seals the practice. Whatever practice we've done, dedication seals it and enhances its benefits and results. And he quotes from the Ratna Hutta Sutra, all phenomena are caused by circumstance, and so our destiny is determined by what we wish for. Depending on the aspirations that we make, we shall obtain results that correspond. So this is why dedication, we feel that dedication works. It has an effect. We feel that all of our practice has an effect because according to the teachings, what happens in the future is a result of causes and conditions, and our aspirations become a cause or a condition, whatever we aspire to. So if we dedicate to all sentient beings in the hope, in the wish that they will attain enlightenment through our activity, that becomes a cause for them actually to become enlightened, to become awakened in the future. It actually becomes a cause as much as anything else is a cause. So our aspirations are really important. So he goes on to say, right dedication is to dedicate your meritorious actions of body, speech, and mind to the enlightenment of all beings, beginning with those who have harmed you and created obstacles for you. And this comes right out of the 37 practices, right? This is exactly how we relate to anyone who harms us in any way, is we wish for them to become awakened. You know, in the Bodhisattva Boot Camp verses 12 through 19, we wish specific things. We see them as our teacher. We give them all our stuff, depending on what they did to us. But basically, when anyone harms us, it's an opportunity for us to wish them well, to dedicate our activity to their enlightenment. So I thought that that was really helpful that he said, you know, when we think that we're dedicating, we need to be sure to bring to mind people that we might not wish to dedicate to if we don't think about it. Bring them to mind. You know, the person who just hurt you in some way, dedicate your merit to them as well as to all sentient beings. So here's the paragraph where he describes the benefit of dedication. He says, if you share with all beings the merit of a practice or positive action, that merit will last until you reach enlightenment, just as a drop of water that you put into the ocean will never dry up for as long as the ocean remains. But if you neglect to share the merit, it is like pouring a drop of water on a hot stone. It evaporates right away because we're going to get caught up in some emotional reaction like any minute now, right? He says, or it is like a seed that bears fruit once and then dies. If you fail to seal your merit with authentic dedication, then however vast the offerings and positive actions you have performed may be, their results can only be ephemeral and vulnerable to the destructive effects of your negative emotions, such as anger, pride, and jealousy. So this reminded me, as I wrote in the notes, of Gampopa in the Ornament of Precious Liberation. He actually quotes Shantideva. And I don't have it right in front of me, but the gist of the quote is that no matter how much virtue we accumulate, no matter how many good deeds we do, a moment of anger can destroy all of it. So that's why we want to dedicate the merit, because it makes it invulnerable to being destroyed by whatever we do next when we lose our mindfulness and vigilance. And so Dingo Chensi Rinpoche makes that point here. He says, it is also important to dedicate your merit to the right goal and not just to the petty achievements of this life, such as wealth, good health, success, and influence. Your true goal should be total, unsurpassable enlightenment for the sake of others. The next section I'm not going to read, but Marilyn, this is for you. You noticed it, right? It's an explanation of the second verse of dedication. Marilyn has asked a number of times for a teaching on the dedication prayers that we say after everything we do, and we've never gotten around to it yet, although we have promised to do it soon because we're coming to the end of Ornament of Precious Liberation. But here it is, explanation of why it says, why it cites Manjushri and Samantabhadra, because their offerings were so amazing. I mean, their dedication was so amazing that we want to be able to dedicate in the same way as them. And so Dingo Chensi Rinpoche says, if you feel like you're really not that capable of dedicating your merit perfectly, then just you can aspire again. Aspirations become causes and conditions for the thing to happen that we're aspiring to. We can aspire to do it like Manjushri and Samantabhadra. So that's it. I did want to share, though, and I do this in the notes as well, because Dingo Chensi Rinpoche quotes several other verses of dedication. At the bottom of page 195, he cites the last verse of dedication, although he doesn't explain it. He just cites other dedications we can use. And he also cites some from Shantideva. And so it reminded me, I've live streamed several of Pema Chidren's retreats from Omega Institute. She does one every year. And what she has done for a dedication for the last several years is a verse from Shantideva. So I'm going to share the screen. I just think it's a very lovely dedication. It's like a dedication / aspiration in four lines. It's very beautiful. And I'm going to share via share screen from my notes online. Let's see. There it is. Is that it? That is not it. That is an Apple software update. Let's see. There we go. It's going to be here. Okay, here we go. I'm going to just make that a little small. Whoops, a little smaller. Sorry for the scrolling. All right, so this first formulation here is the way that, I don't know where this translation is from. It's not any of the translations I have. But this is the form in which Pema Chidren uses it as a dedication. So we can read that together. And now, as long as space endures, and as long as there are beings to be found, may I continue likewise to remain to drive away the sorrows of the world. So that's how she ends all of her teaching sessions. And I reformulated it a little bit to fit the meter of the Tibetan and put it to an adaptation of the tune we're using for the 37 practices. The lines are shorter, so it's not exactly the same tune. But here it is. However long the sky endures, and there are beings to be found, may I continue to remain, dispelling all their suffering. However long the sky endures, and there are beings to be found, may I continue to remain, dispelling all their suffering. So anyway, you can use whatever dedications you like. We obviously, you know, at KTC, we use the ones that are our prayers, the standard four verses, or you can just use the first verse, is often used on its own. But there are there lovely dedications that you can also, they're useful to keep in mind. I don't know if anybody has that Lama Jinzan, for example. I don't have it on me right now, but Tempo Sultram Jamsa Rinpoche created, he composed a really lovely dedication. It's in about six lines. I will find that and email that out. KTGR dedication. Okay. So that sums up the dedication, and we're going to spend a few minutes on the concluding verses. But first, does anybody have any questions, comments, insights, observations? Lama Jinzan, thank you. I'm muting you.
This has to do with Kenpo Soltram Jomso's commentary. And I have that, and I read that, and it's the line, you know, when he says that nothing of the three spheres exists. If you can find that, whatever line you read.
Yeah, it's without understanding that the three spheres do not truly exist.
Yeah.
It is quite difficult to comprehend.
Well, the way it's stated there, I always thought there was almost a feeling of like, you have to be very careful because it almost comes off as nihilistic in my mind, you know. It brings that thought like nothing exists, you know, but it seems to me it has to be done, and this is because I haven't realized it yet, but the idea that as His Holiness Karmapa was just saying, you know, you have to do it without any attachment, without any reservation, but at some level there has to be a recognition at somewhere in an awareness that there's something that you're doing, you know, that there has to be a union at that point of ultimate and relative bodhicitta. I just found it when I read that, because I read that commentary before the class too, and that particular way he did it, it came up a little bit of nihilism, like there's nothing at all that exists whatsoever. And just the way it was said at that time, and I have to keep reminding myself that, yes, what it's saying is that, again, everything is independently mere appearance. So it's not ultimately in a substantial way happening, but it is in a nothingness, and you have to do it. There has to be some sort of union of that consciousness. That's what I thought of.
Yeah, I think when we look, I think I actually wrote something about that in the notes. Right, here we go. So in short, I think it addresses the same point, and actually it's right after.
Yes, there it is, the dream thing.
Yeah.
This is when you wake up.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's Kenpo Sultram Jamso's explanation that we just read. And so I tried to clarify that in the paragraph afterwards. This was me writing this. In short, even as we are doing our dedication in relative reality, we remain in touch with its ultimate reality, as Tokme Zangpo has also instructed us to do with regard to generosity, patience, and the other transcending actions. What makes these actions transcendent, and thus makes them causes for awakening, is remembering that whatever we experience has no independent, permanent, true, separate existence in ultimate reality. So relatively, we are dedicating the merit, and it's very important to do this. Ultimately, none of the elements of the dedication exist in the ordinary way in which we perceive them, and it's very important to remember this. So does that address that point?
Yes, it does.
Same point. I do think that's really important. I feel like the biggest misunderstanding that I run across in myself and students is a confusion about how ultimate and relative reality relate to each other. You know, when people learn about ultimate reality, that everything's empty, they tend to think that that somehow trumps relative reality, so that it really means nothing exists, as you're saying. It becomes kind of nihilistic. And but really, they coexist, and they're the same. You know, it's just that everything in relative reality is suffused with ultimate reality. Mm. Okay, so anyway, anybody have anything further on that Lama Jinzan?
No, No, it was just, it's the way he said it, you know, like he says, it's like a dream and it's over. And it struck me, like, if you didn't know what, like you were pointing out in your further paragraph, you get sort of, that's a weird thing to just say like that.
Yeah. It's an important point that we always need to keep in mind, that we don't mean nothing. Like, we don't mean nothing exists in any way. We just mean it doesn't exist in the way we conventionally perceive it.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lama Jinzong. Anybody else? Okay, then we'll go on to the concluding verses. And mostly, I just read the, I didn't translate them. So we're going to read we're just going to read the translation, whatever one you have, because it saves me from having to go back and forth. I'm just going to read them from Kenpo Soltram Jongso Rinpoche, because I'm going to share his commentary with you. For those of you who don't have it, it's just a very nice, concise, straightforward commentary on each of the concluding verses. So what we learn from the concluding verses is that there's a convention, like traditionally for those masters who write these texts, there's certain forms that they have to go through at the end. And you see it typically at the end of most texts. I think that Tokmei Zanko has done a particularly thorough job of it. He hit all the points, each one in a separate verse. So we're guided through them by Kenpo Soltram Jongso Rinpoche, and all the other commentaries also talk about them. So, but I liked the way Ken MacLeod titled them, because each of his one-word descriptions of what the verse is, I thought succinctly summed it up. So the first one is, according to Ken MacLeod, the source. He has to identify the source of his teachings, and so, if you're looking at any commentary, it'll have the same content as what I'm going to read from Kenpo Soltram Jongso Rinpoche, though it could be worded quite differently. So the verse is, relying on what is taught in the sutras, tantras, treatises, and the words of the genuine masters, I have composed these 37 bodhisattva practices for the benefit of those who wish to train on the bodhisattva's path. So this is about his motivation and about where he's getting the content. So what Kenpo Soltram Jongso Rinpoche says here is, in this verse, Mulchu Tokmei, you may recall that that's the same as Tokmei Zanpo. He has four names, Jalse, Mulchu, Tokmei Zanpo, explains what he has composed and why he has composed it. He refers to his reliance on the teachings of the sutras, tantras, treatises, and on the instruction of the genuine master. It is a traditional requirement to mention these precedents so that everyone understands, and here's the important point and why it's worth reading these concluding verses, so that everyone understands Tokmei Zanko did not personally make up the practices. He has based them on the teachings of the great masters who have preceded him. So I talk about this a little bit more in the class notes. This is the definition of lineage. This is why we trust these teachings, because we know that they have been tested. They've been tried and tested through many generations. They actually work, and Tokmei Zanpo doesn't need to make something up. He can put it into his own words, but he's clearly identifying his sources here. And that's really important. You know, if somebody thinks they have a better idea, you have to be really careful. Somebody says, let's throw this out because I think things have changed in the century since this text was written, so let's do it like the 21st century way. Well, actually, this works in the 21st century just as it worked in the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries. Nothing changed. So we don't want to throw these out. This is like our precious lineage, that these teachings have been handed down unchanged, basically. Reworded sometimes, but the essence of them not changed through all of these centuries. So Kenpo Soltram Jongso Rinpoche goes on to say his purpose. So that was the first two lines, is where the teachings came from, that he's just shared with us in his own words. And then the second two lines are why he did it. And so Kenpo Soltram Jongso Rinpoche says, his purpose has been to summarize the vast number of bodhisattva practices into a manageable 37 to benefit those who have entered the Mahayana path and wish to train in it. Thus, Tokmei has made the practices easy for everyone to apply. So as we discussed at the very beginning of the course a year ago, this tiny little text of 37 easily read, easily memorized, easily applied verses includes all the teachings of the Lamrim, the stages of the whole path. Like if you're familiar with Gampopa's Ornament of Precious Liberation, you'll see it's the same path. It's the same practices. It's the same information. And it also includes the mind training teachings. It's a good summary of all the mind training teachings. If you're familiar with the Great Path of Awakening, same thing. But sort of just somehow crafted into a very short text. So it makes it easy for everyone to read it, everyone to memorize it, everyone to apply it in their life. So that is the beauty of the 37 practices. So the second of the concluding verses, Ken MacLeod calls the authority for sharing this. And the verse is, because my intelligence, and this is Tokme Zangpo speaking, because my intelligence is inferior and my studies few, I cannot compose poetry pleasing to scholars. Yet, since these verses are based on the sutras and the teachings of the genuine masters, I believe these bodhisattva practices are not mistaken. So again, in a whole other verse, he's driving in the same point that he did not make this up. This is from the realized masters who have gone before, whose teachings have been thoroughly tested. So Kempo Sultram Jamso Rinpoche says, these lines are included because Tibetan tradition also requires a verse in which the author, to counteract pride, belittles himself. So this is what you have to do. And I remember so many times, especially in the earlier years, when Lama Rinpoche taught a lot, he would so often say, I don't have any realization to share with you. I'm sharing with you what I learned from my teacher, Kala Rinpoche. He would deny having any realization of his own, you know, for him to teach us. He was just passing along the teaching. So this is very standard. This is the boilerplate. Like, I don't really know anything, but my teachers taught me this. So I'm passing it on to you on their authority. So here Tokme minimizes his intelligence and learning and states that his verses cannot possibly please scholars. Nevertheless, because he has based his work on authentic teachings, he has confidence that the verses are free of mistakes and confusion. And I shared in the class notes in this last live stream from Pema Chidren in May, she's talking about the six realms and like the emotional reactivity that contributes to, you know, that makes you manifest in one of the realms, you know, anger in the hell realms, greed in the hungry ghost realms, and so forth and so on. And she said that for her, she said this towards the end, she said that for her, the one that she, like she thought, she said, people think I don't have to worry about any of these things, but I do. And the one I worry the most about, frankly, is pride, which leads to the God's realm. Because people make so much of me. She said, you people applaud when I sneeze. And like that could really build up somebody's ego. And she said, I didn't put this in the notes, but she actually said, that she had found herself not long ago, like somebody was arguing with her or something, and she actually had the thought, do you know who I am? And she caught herself having that thought, and she was like, that's pride. Like, that's the God's realm. But, and she also said that she visits her adult daughter occasionally and does not act like a bodhisattva at all. That she still gets into the same fights, constant fights with her daughter that she always has. So to me, this is like, this is a sign of authenticity, that you don't think you're some big deal. Like, you're just sharing what you've learned that you have to share with people, but you know, you're not perfect yourself. And I think it's really, I worry about people who are kind of at the other end of the spectrum. Teachers who make a big deal out of their advanced practices and, you know, advanced studies and their title and, you know, and so on and so forth. They like titles and they like to share their credentials, and I steer clear of those teachers, and they tend to be the inexperienced ones. Hopefully that will wear off. But that's actually one of the qualities that Dzongsar Chense Rinpoche tells us we should look for when we're seeking an authentic teacher in his book, The Guru Drinks Bourbon, which is about what is an authentic teacher and how do you find one. humility is one of the qualities he says is indispensable. Like, they shouldn't be making a big deal out of themselves. So this is where Tokme Zangpo has to not make a big deal out of himself. And I feel it's sincere. Just as I think it was sincere when Lama Noyo Rinpoche would always say it, but we knew, like, he's so far ahead of us. He has so much realization. And yet he's saying he doesn't have any. So the third verse is called, Ken calls it the shortcomings. So he has to identify his shortcomings. And actually it was Digo Chense Rinpoche had a nice take on it. Something about asking for forgiveness for your faults. So the verse is, nevertheless, for one with an inferior intellect such as mine, the vast conduct of a bodhisattva is difficult to fathom. So I pray to the genuine masters to consider with patience my contradictions, inconsistencies, and any other mistakes I have made. So Kenpo Sultram Jamsa Rinpoche says of this one, Tokme has previously stated that because he has relied on unmistaken sources, he is confident his practices are also unmistaken. Now he acknowledges that contradictions and incoherence still may have crept in due to his limited intellectual capacities. If he has made mistakes like these, he prays the genuine masters will be patient with them. So again, humility. And then the fourth verse, that's it's actually the final verse, called the dedication. And the verse is, by virtue of the merit gathered here, through the power of relative and genuine bodhicitta, may all wandering beings be liberated from the extremes of existence and peace. That also means samsara and nirvana. Existence is a synonym for samsara. Peace is a synonym for nirvana. May all wandering beings be liberated from these two extremes, just like the protector Chenrezig. So why do you want to be liberated from nirvana? Like, this brings up a really good question, and we're going to address that. Actually, Kenpo Sultram Jamsa Rinpoche is going to address that. and Gampopa talks about that too in Ornament of Precious Liberation, as Marilyn will remember and Mark will remember. But what Kenpo Sultram Jamsa Rinpoche says about this verse is, Chenrezig does not abide in cyclic existence. He's not in samsara, nor is he attached to the state of peace. So the state of peace is a partial nirvana. In our tradition, we are going for full awakening, which is bringing everybody with us, which is not our own personal freedom from suffering, but we continue to work for everybody's freedom, everybody's complete liberation. So Chenrezig does not abide in samsara, nor is he attached to the state of nirvana, partial nirvana, or personal freedom from suffering. Why? Since he has realized the emptiness that cuts the root of existence, he does not dwell in samsara. He's realized emptiness and that frees him from samsara. That's the freedom of an arhat. That's the arhat level of liberation, is that you are not stuck in confusion and suffering anymore. You have realized emptiness. That's the first level of a bodhisattva, the first bhumi. Yes, Anne, I'm going to unmute you. Yes.
Is that what the land of bliss is?
What land of bliss?
Well, you know the prayer, Imaho, that we say?
Yeah, the Dewa Chen prayer.
The Dewa Chen prayer.
No. Dewa Chen is the Buddha realm of Amitabha. So it's a full Buddha realm. Although it's said that you can be born in it without having to attain Buddhahood first. You can be born in that one just through aspiration. So it's a very forgiving Buddha realm where you don't have to be completely enlightened, yet you can keep working towards it and you have everything you need to do it, which is why we aspire to be reborn there and not in samsara where we're struggling all the time. Yeah.
And you can continue to help beings from there.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but you don't have to be like on a bodhisattva bhumi to go to that. Lama Jinsong, if you have anything to add, please feel free. Yeah, I'm going to unmute you.
But, you know, my understanding, when it says Dewa Chen, I mean, that's a pure realm, but my understanding of Dewa Chen is that's a place where beings are born and continue on the path, right? Mm-hmm. So they're continuing to train, but like as you're saying, as opposed to being, you know, already a bodhisattva.
Do you want to go up further?
That looks good.
I'm hearing something from Candy Mandelberg.
I just muted her.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry, guys. Sorry. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So, but what you're saying is, and I'm agreeing, is just that this idea that you're reborn in Dewa Chen, it's the one place that if you don't already have to be like a bodhisattva to get there, is that you can aspire to become, and the minute you're born there, it's a bodhisattva level. So, or you're of that ilk, you know, so you continue to train, like they say, the Dewa Chen, there's no sign of suffering, even the idea of suffering doesn't exist. So you're already at a level, but whether you're able to help beings from that point, you know, I guess once you're on the bodhisattva level, they say immediately you're able to emanate a certain amount of beings. I'm not really sure, you know, where you go from there, but I just know of Dewa Chen, like when they talk about it, is that you're being born there for the benefit of others, you're being born there and you're immediately, you know, it's you're continuing to train to become a Buddha. So it's not like a Buddha realm in the sense of everyone there is a Buddha.
Right.
That's what I wanted to say. You know, like it's sort of a misnomer to say it's a Buddha realm in the sense that everybody there is a Buddha.
Right. But it is Amitabha's Buddha realm.
No, but I mean in terms of the residents, the inhabitants or the visitors.
So that's why we aspire to be born there because we can. We could. It's like a shortcut.
Yeah.
Anyway, does that clarify your question, Anne?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And again, if anybody has any other comments, please feel free anytime. So I'm just going to restart the Kimbo Sutram Jhamsa Rinpoche so we have the full context. Shinraisi does not abide in cyclic existence, nor is he attached to the state of peace. Why? Since he has realized the emptiness that cuts the root of existence, he does not dwell in samsara. And because great compassion has uprooted Shinraisi's wish for nirvana to benefit himself alone, he is not attached to peace or to his own personal nirvana or freedom from suffering. Therefore, Tokme Zanpo prays that all beings become equal to Shinraisi, like this is the enlightenment we're looking for. And he dedicates to them the merit of having composed these practices. He makes the aspiration that like the protector Shinraisi, who dwells on the Bodhisattva Bhumis, all beings develop absolute bodhicitta, freeing them from the bonds of existence, and relative bodhicitta, freeing them from attachment to peace. So the culmination of relative bodhicitta is compassion, right? And the culmination of ultimate bodhicitta is wisdom. It's like complete lack of confusion, completely seeing things the way they are. Those are the two wings of awakening, and that's the awakening that Tokme Zangpo wants for us. And just a little side note that I think is useful for everybody, but particularly for our Washington, D.C. Sangha, because we just finished studying the Bodhisattva Bhumis, and we're in the middle of studying the Buddha chapter, the first Buddha chapter, like what is Buddhahood, an ornament of precious liberation. Let's find it. And Dingo Chense Rinpoche, in his explanation of this particular concluding verse, he says, the dedication is a sincere prayer that all beings may achieve Shinraisi's level and that they may benefit all living beings just as he does. On the absolute level, and here's where he clarifies, it's you know, I don't think about it much because I kind of see both sides without really understanding why. Sometimes Shinraisi is usually referred to as a bodhisattva, but occasionally he's referred to as a Buddha in the literature. So here, Dingo Chense Rinpoche explains how that works. He says, on the absolute level, Shinraisi is the nature of the Vajra speech of all the Buddhas, and he possesses the five bodies and wisdoms of a fully enlightened Buddha. So he's got everything a Buddha has. On the relative level, he appears as a 10th Bhumi Bodhisattva to beings within the realm of his compassionate activity. So this also addresses the question which was unresolved in Dampopa. He didn't really address it specifically. Sometimes it looks like the 10th Bodhisattva level is the same as Buddhahood, and sometimes it looks like there's a distinction. So here it seems there's a distinction according to Dingo Chense Rinpoche, because ultimately he's a Buddha, but relatively he's a 10th level Bodhisattva. They seem to be very, very close to the same thing. Okay, so, and there's one more little bit. We have 10 minutes left, so we'll have time for a little discussion at the end. One little bit left that Ken McLeod doesn't even include in his commentary is called the epilogue here, or the place of composition. The monk Tokme, a proponent of scriptures and logic, has composed these verses in a cave known as Mulchu Rinchen Phuk to benefit himself and others. So almost every practice, almost every text has a line like that, even if it doesn't have all of the other conclusions. It has that, like who wrote it and where they were when they wrote it. And sometimes it identifies what year, like the year of the female water sheep or whatever. Here we don't get the time. But so the monk Tokme, a teacher of scriptures and logic, has composed these verses in a cave known as Mulchu Rinchen Phuk to benefit himself and others. And Mulchu is part of his name, remember? It's Silver River. It's where the cave is located, where he spent the last 20 years of his life. And hence the name of Ken McLeod's commentary, Reflections on Silver River, very clever commentary, name, title. And Rinchen Phuk, Rinchen means jewel or precious thing, and Phuk means cave. So he wrote it in the cave, the jewel cave on the Silver River in the 14th century Tibet. And to me, it remains just as living and useful and applicable a text now as it certainly was then. And recall that according to his biographies, he wrote this text as a reminder to himself. He left the abbacy of a monastery because he really wanted to go and practice. He just wanted to devote the rest of his life to practice. So for the last 20 years of his life, he lived in this cave, more or less. I mean, I don't know if he spent exactly 20 years in the cave, but it said that for the last 20 years of his life, after he resigned, stepped down as abbot of his monastery, he just went and stayed in solitary practice, although apparently he did have interactions and did some teaching as well. He wrote these verses to remind himself how he wanted to live every day of his life. And hopefully, though we have finished the text, we will also do the same. We don't even have to write the text. Although Ken McLeod, I'm going to pull out Ken McLeod for a second. I did mark a couple of things. Let me see. I marked something from Karmapa, too, since we have a couple of minutes. But no, I don't think we need that. Yeah, it's just, it's already been said. So I'm just going to find the Ken McLeod because he has a couple of really nice things to say, or interesting things, interesting takes, as he often does. Let's go back. Okay, so I'm just going to share a couple of observations from Ken McLeod's commentaries on individual verses, on the source verse, the first one, like where did these teachings come from and why am I doing this? Ken says, in your hands you have the essence of the Bodhisattva path set out by an intelligent and devoted practitioner, even if he says otherwise in his verses, who lived in Tibet in the 14th century. It is a traditional path, a systematic sequence of practices established by the Indian master Atisha in the 11th century. That's specifically relating to the mind training aspect of it, but also I think from Atisha comes the Lamam as well. A sequence that became the model for the Bodhisattva path in the Buddhist traditions of Tibet. So this text has been used continuously for all of these centuries. He says, this path was his life. From his biography, it is clear that he did not seek fame, renown, riches, or immortality. He took these teachings to heart and lived them to the best of his abilities. He set them down for himself, but of course for others also. I think it's just always good to remember Tokme Zangpo, like who he was. He's very inspiring. I remember, like Gampopa too, Lama Jinzang will also remember that when Sita Rinpoche has taught Ornament of Precious Liberation, and we've heard him do it a couple of times, he spends a lot of time on the biography of Gampopa, on who he was. And especially in the series that he did, that I think it was cut short and not finished so far, but he was doing a really extensive commentary on Ornament of Precious Liberation, and it was being live streamed to centers, like you couldn't do it individually. He spent like the first several weekends on Gampopa's life. And what he said, you know, it, you could see it as like, why can't we get to the main text? Why can't we get there? Because it's Gampopa, Gampopa, more Gampopa, more on Gampopa. Let me tell you even more about Gampopa. But what he said towards the end of that, he said, the reason I'm spending so much time on the life of Gampopa is because if you don't understand what an extraordinary person he was, you will not appreciate how extraordinary his teachings are. And I feel the same about Thokme Zangpo. He was an extraordinary person. I mean, just to imagine any single individual actually trying to live these teachings, like in an undistracted way, to really completely devote themselves to this path. And then we think of all the benefit from the fact that he wrote it down and that we can still read it and practice it. So on about the second verse, the authority verse, like how come I get to do this? Ken says about Thokme Zangpo, drawing on what he had learned and what he had experienced in his own practice, Thokme Zangpo wrote down these 37 verses to help him focus his efforts. And so he says, Ken has some advice for us here, which I think is really interesting advice, and we could all think about doing this. He says, you might consider doing something similar. Like, we've all been around the Dharma for a while, right? He says, you might consider doing something similar. You do not have to write 37 verses, of course. You could write 3 or 5 or 16, or you could just start writing and it ends when it ends. What have you learned about practice? What reminders would you write for yourself? So if we wanted to distill like everything that we've gotten from all of the teachings and contemplation, all the meditation we've done over however many years we've been doing this, what would we write down? This is what Thokme Zangpo wrote down. I don't think we can do better than Thokme Zangpo, but it might be interesting, an interesting experiment, like to just sit down and go, okay, what do I understand about the Dharma? Like in just a few lines, like how would I distill what I've learned about the Dharma? And that's it. That's all I have to share from Ken. So anybody have anything? We still have a few minutes left. Anybody have anything they would like to share or ask? Angela, I'm unmuting you.
The Bodhisattva level or the tien and the difference between that and pure Buddha is because the Bodhisattva still causes suffering on some level because you still have to learn.
There's actually no suffering on the boomies. You've eliminated suffering by completely understanding emptiness, and that's where you are on, when you completely directly see emptiness, you completely got it. Like not just a fleeting glimpse, but you got it in your meditation. Like this is how I understand the definition. You're on the first boomy when you completely directly get emptiness. Whenever you sit in meditation, you are right there. But well, you haven't stabilized your life yet. Part. Yeah.
So that part.
Yeah.
So when you're teaching, there's suffering, like from the, like from a student like me, like I suffer because of the teachings, because I'm, you know, like it strains my brain sometimes, or I get, yeah. There's still some level of suffering you cause, not that you're. Would that be the difference between a Buddha? Because Buddhas don't cause suffering themselves when you're taking, you know, like that's maybe why you don't take refuge. You take refuge in the Buddha because mm-hmm. they don't cause any suffering. Mm-hmm. Whereas a Buddha sattva you're learning from and they cause suffering sometimes because they have to. You have to break it. I was just curious.
Well,
I'm
not sure I would put it that way. We did just finish in Washington, D.C., we finished studying the Bodhisattva Bhumis. And what they are is that in the first bhumi, you've completely got emptiness, so you don't suffer personally. You understand that, but you haven't stabilized it completely in your life yet. It's not completely purified and completely stabilized. So one thing that we learned about the bhumis is that at each bhumi level, you're purifying, completely purifying and perfecting one of the paramitas. And so there turned out to be 10 paramitas in all. So at the first bodhisattva, you spend the first bodhisattva bhumi perfecting generosity, and the second one perfecting ethical conduct, and the third bodhisattva level you're perfecting patience, and so on and so forth. So the bodhisattva levels are just refinement of any impurities that remain in your realization, and I guess in your compassion. But I don't know if you cause suffering. I mean, Chenrezig is considered a bodhisattva, and his job is to relieve suffering. I don't think he would cause suffering. Yeah.
I think only because in samsara, when I break from something, or when the concept is broken, that causes suffering. But ultimately, in absolute, it's releasing me from suffering. So that's why I thought maybe that was the distinction.
Right.
Not that it was his goal or that it was.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I think it's just so refined at that point. Like, our experience is so coarse by comparison to even a first level bodhisattva, I think. Now, I'm not qualified to answer your question, completely, because I'm not, I think a 10th level bodhisattva could absolutely tell you the story, or even probably a first level bodhisattva could answer your question better. But that's just how I understand it. It's just you're refining all the impurities that remain in your realization. So as to whether that causes you or someone else suffering, I guess I can't really address that. Anything else, Angela?
No.
Okay, good question. And anybody else have anything they'd like to ask or to share? Well, it is, yes, Marilyn. Oops. I think we're both trying to unmute you. I'm going to give it one more. Okay, you unmute yourself, because I'm going to be hands off now. And you unmute. Okay, now you're good.
I would just like to say that, of course, this course goes along with Gompopa, but the intensification of my understanding of what I'm setting out to do off the cushion has been so deepened by the study of the 37 practices. Now, I mean, it also on the cushion, but really, it's really deepened what I've understood and what I'm aiming for immensely.
Yeah, me too. Yes, so you just wanted to share that?
Yeah. Me three.
Thank you. Yes. Anybody else want a second or third or fourth? Thank you, Marilyn. I think we got a...
I found it really helpful, for sure.
Yeah, Mark. Okay. Anybody disagree? Anybody find that this did not deepen their experience? Well, and I think there's still a lot to go. Okay, Kathy, I'm going to unmute you. We're a little past 2:30 now, so if you have to leave, leave. But we will meet next week. We will meet next week. It'll be our final meeting, and we're going to do a wrap-up, and I'll email everybody. But think about what you have gotten out of this study. And the practice that goes with it. And let's talk about that next week and how we're going to move forward. So, Kathy, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I think the fact that it's taken us a year, I mean, it's something to really spend that much time on all these verses. I found that extraordinarily helpful.
And don't you feel we rushed through a few of them?
Not much.
Well, there were some we spent like 3 weeks on verse 11. There were a few that we spent multiple weeks on. And then at the end, we had to tie things up. I think we could do so much more. I mean, I think we could start at the beginning of the 37 practices again now, and we could have a fabulous another year on it and get so much more out of it. Okay, thanks for sharing that, Kathy. Anybody else have anything they would like to say? Macy, I'm unmuting you. Okay.
So I would just like to say how much I appreciate you allowing me to jump in on this so late, and how much it's helped me already.
That's great. Just the last few verses.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for setting that up, Kathy.
Well, we're very happy to have you here, Macy.
Thank you very much.
I guess we better wrap up our discussion in case people have to go, but we will meet next week and we can do a lot more of this kind of talking. So bring your thoughts and comments and insights next week. And we'll also talk about what we're going to do next time. I do want to throw out one thing right now Gompopa is by far the front runner for our next course of study, Ornament of Precious Liberation, and it will take us a year, probably. But Valerie, who couldn't be here today because she had like a doctor's appointment, I think, she said, I mean, she's happy with Gompopa, but she said another topic she would really like to do is death and dying. So you can think about that and let me know your feedback. Angela has a comment? Yes, Angela.
Nyingma Rinpoche is also releasing a book about the death and dying too this year, coming out. I went to the retreat in Minnesota.
Oh, great. The one in June, just now?
Yeah.
Great. Wow, I'd love to hear about that sometime.
and Lama Children?
Yes, Fanny.
Yeah, when I was in the retreat in a monastery in not Dharamsala in Sherbling, mm-hmm. Thay Sithu too did 20 hours of overcoming the fear of sickness and death, and I have it on tape. And it was really powerful. It was to a group of non-Buddhists. There were about six of us that mm-hmm. were practitioners and the rest were lay people. So it was really powerful, fundamental, but profound. Yeah. So I'm happy to share that.
Okay, thank you. We can talk about the details of that. So those are the two things that have been offered. Somebody else may have suggested something else. I can't remember, but I can look it up. Or please let me know if there's something else you'd like to study. If we were to look at death and dying as opposed to Gompopa, Trungpa Rinpoche has a really fabulous book that's been out for some years now, Journey of the Mind. And so even if we do Gompopa next, I recommend that book to anybody who wants to know how in this life to prepare for dying and what's going to happen in the Barbary States and so forth.
And Boka Rinpoche.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Anne, go ahead.
Sorry, Boka Rinpoche also has a book, Death and the Art of Dying. It's really
Boka Rinpoche? Really
good. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I'm familiar with that one. I'll have to look that up. That's good to know. Anyway, let me know what you want to study. Gompopa obviously is the whole path, again, and extremely useful. And it's the same thing. It's how to prepare for dying. It's how to make the most of this precious human existence. It's basically going to be the same advice, but with a different spin to it, slightly different, structure. Yes, Lama Jinzan.
I remember I asked Lama Norla Rinpoche once, because having done retreat, and there's lots of different things you're told you should do, and to prepare. And there's practices like people know about publicly, POA, transference of consciousness and blah, blah, blah. And he just said, and I found this very helpful. He said that of course I found it helpful. He said it, but regardless, it's that the best thing you can be doing is to be resting in the nature of mind, because the reality is it could happen at any moment. So the practice is to be, like the basic practice of resting in the essence of the nature of mind as best you can, because most people don't even know the exact moment they're dying. I mean, they may know leading up to it. He says, just like when you go to sleep, do you know the exact moment that you actually, that transition from falling asleep to deep sleep and that awareness? So, anyway, that's just an interesting thing that he once said. So I find that whatever, in terms of death and dying, whatever we practice, but the most important thing, just like with His Holiness Karmapa in the recent teachings, it's really to be looking inward at your mind at every moment and to be doing the recognition of the essence of mind or the nature of mind, and to be in open awareness, the union of insight, whatever you want to say it, and calm abiding. The point being that it's not about learning a lot of fancy stuff necessarily if you cannot at every single moment be openly aware. And so that's a very important point.
Yeah, I think it's summed up also in verse 36. And we are going to talk, my agenda for next week, besides sort of open discussion, is to talk a little bit more about mindfulness and vigilance. That is the essence of the path. And that was what I thank Lama Jinzan for bringing into the discussion here. Always watching your mind. So let's do our dedication, and we'll meet again next week. with or without prayer position. I don't tend to use it, but sort of naturally happens when we're going to do prayers. This merit may it win omniscience. defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. And now the verse that Bingo Chense Rinpoche talked about, that if we don't feel like we are completely qualified to know how to dedicate our merit, Kuntu Zangpo and Manjushri do. So we're going to train in their example. So we're going to chant that verse now. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu Zangpo and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. So let's take just a second to bring our minds back to rest in awareness of our embodiment in this present moment of awareness. Vigilance that we're acting in accordance with the Dharma, mindfulness of what that is. And with that, we will say goodbye. I'm going to unmute everybody for a second as I prepare to exercise. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
What? Oh, well, I don't know what that was. But bye, everybody. See you next week.
Bye. Have a great week.
Bye.